and a good Wednesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show podcast, available in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online at work by visiting the website nickcraig.com. We want to thank the law group this morning here in Wilmington for their continued support of the show. More details on them coming up a little bit later on this morning. Well, President Trump on a busy four-day trip in the Middle East, his first international diplomacy trip since becoming the president. He obviously was in the Vatican back just a couple of weeks ago for Pope Francis's funeral. That was an international trip, but he was in and out for the funeral, making his way back to the United States. And he continues this morning with a four-day trip in the Middle East. And with that, a major announcement coming out of the White House and Saudi Arabia yesterday, as President Trump signed off on the largest defense sale agreement in history, worth a whopping $142 billion. This taking place in his first full day in Saudi Arabia yesterday, part of a series of bilateral deals worth over $600 billion in total. That's total investment all across the board. In remarks to business leaders, the president pitched Saudi Arabia as a key to building peace and prosperity in the Middle East, contrasting the kingdom with the nuclear instigation of Iran. This is what the president had to say in Saudi Arabia yesterday in front of a packed house, in front of the name of the forum was the Saudi U.S. Investment Forum. Here's President Trump commenting on this yesterday.
The transformations have been unbelievably remarkable. Before our eyes, a new generation of leaders is transcending the ancient conflicts of tired divisions of the past and forging a future where the Middle East is defined by commerce, not chaos, where it exports technology, not terrorism, and where people of different nations, religions, and creeds are building cities together, not bombing each other out of existence. We don't want that. And it's crucial for the wider world to note this great transformation has not come from Western interventionists or flying people in beautiful planes giving you lectures on how to live and how to govern your own affairs. No, the gleaming marvels of Riyadh and Abu Dhabi were not created by the so-called nation builders, neocons, or liberal nonprofits like those who spend trillions and trillions of dollars failing to develop Kabul, Baghdad, so many other cities. Instead, the birth of a modern Middle East has been brought by the people of the region themselves, the people that are right here, the people that have lived here all their lives, developing your own sovereign countries, pursuing your own unique visions, and charting your own destinies in your own way. It's really incredible what you've done. In the end, the so-called nation builders wrecked far more nations than they built, and the interventionists were intervening in complex societies that they did not even understand themselves. They told you how to do it, but they had no idea how to do it themselves. Peace, prosperity, and progress ultimately came not from a radical rejection of your heritage, but rather from embracing your national traditions and embracing that same heritage that you love so dearly.
So that's President Trump yesterday in Saudi Arabia. A couple of different things to take there. Talks about the prosperity and the success in Saudi Arabia. Absolutely torches the neocon globalist folk, the liberal nonprofits, NGOs that have attempted to do this in other places. He mentions places like Baghdad, where trillions of dollars have been spent. And the end result is it's exactly the same that it was beforehand. So not only talking about some of the successes out of other regions in the Middle East, specifically in this case, talking about Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Qatar, some of those places that have seen incredible amounts of growth and prosperity, but then calling out an attempt by globalists. I mean, that's who these people are. an attempt by globalists to do the same, of course, it's a complete and abject failure, right? When these NGOs and these global groups go into various, and in many cases, you look at war-torn areas of the past, going in there and attempting to fix all of their problems with all of their phenomenal liberal, globalist, neocon ideologies and principles, it just never works. And before I get back to the investment announcement and what some of those details look like, looking at some of the coverage of Trump's first full day, which was yesterday in Saudi Arabia, it's remarkable. They have literally, and I don't try to use that word very often, but they literally rolled out the red carpet for President Trump. You had the Saudi prince meet him at Air Force One, which is not a custom. That does not happen. When Joe Biden visited Saudi Arabia, that was not the case at all. Joe Biden was not visited by the Saudi prince at Air Force One. He walked down the stairs alone and was met by an entourage, but not the Saudi prince. I saw an amazing picture. I didn't save it, but I saw it when I was scrolling through through X earlier this morning. The Saudi prince was driving Trump around in his own personal golf cart, touring him around an area in which he was born, his birthplace. And you can see in this video here, this is the Saudi Arabian prince who is driving the golf cart himself, President Trump sitting in the passenger seat. And you can see the amount of respect that is, of course, being given to President Donald Trump. And obviously, the Saudi prince has an incredible amount of respect for the president. If that wasn't the case, then you would not see a video like this existing. You would not see video of him meeting Trump at Air Force One. That is very unaccustomed in Saudi culture. It just doesn't happen. So obviously, it's respect for President Donald Trump. But more than anything else, it is bringing respect back to the United States of America. And really, this is the key of all of this. President Donald Trump is, I truly believe, is in the business of mutual respect. If you have read, going well before Trump was involved in politics, you go back to his TV days with The Apprentice. You go back to his time as being a loved celebrity and icon, where, you know, calling into the Howard Stern show and Don Imus and going on Oprah and The View and all of these programs, hosting Saturday Night Live. All of these things that Trump did when he was, he of course still is, but when he was just a regular celebrity. Regular New York business tycoon, not involved in politics, at least to the level he is now. It was all about mutual respect. And one thing that I have had the opportunity to learn watching the president, following very closely from 2015 to now, over the last decade, that is one of Trump's biggest things, mutual respect. And it seems pretty obvious and evident that if you are willing to respect Trump, and not Trump the man, but Trump in the position that he is in as the president, the representative of the United States of America, if you respect him, therefore respecting the country, then things will turn out very well for you. And it's great to see this mutual respect in Saudi Arabia. The Saudi Arabian prince was enamored by Trump's visit. Now, I'm sure some of that is Trump's personality. He's a very interesting character. He lights up and energizes a room, the likes of which have not really been seen in politics ever. Some of that was seen in probably the first couple of years of Barack Obama's administration. He had a very similar amount of enamoring that he brought when he walked into a room. He was incredibly good at bringing a crowd together. He was incredibly good at portraying this level of, you know, come talk with me, have a conversation with me. He was very, very good at that. He was a very charismatic figure. And it's why he was so popular in the United States. Now, obviously, we disagree with his policies, disagree with the things he did, or in many cases, things he attempted to do. But looking at this from a pure political standpoint, Barack Obama in the early years had a lot of respect, not too dissimilar from what you see with President Trump. And so this mutual respect is, I think, a core principle of what you're seeing in this administration, right? You look at tariffs. It's about mutual respect. That's really what this is about. You respect the United States, we'll respect you back. The United States respects you, we expect to be respected back. Mutual respect. And it's something that's a relatively common and normal thing, right? When you're at your workplace with your higher-ups, your superiors, your bosses, you want a level of mutual respect. Now, obviously, they're on a higher level than you. You work for them. You work under them. They're a supervisor or a boss. But you want there to be some mutual respect. That's a common, normal thing. And so when you look at the president in this visit that is taking place, this four-day visit that is taking place throughout the Middle East, he's on his way to Qatar this morning. They left a little while ago, left Saudi Arabia, and are currently flying over there right now. Not sure when they're planning on landing or when some of that's going to take place. Obviously, the time zone difference means that these things are happening relatively early in the day here on the East Coast in comparison to things in normal news cycles, things taking place in the afternoon and evening hours. I think that's what you're going to see in this tour throughout the Middle East, is a level of respect. Groups, entities, and world leaders that are showing that to the president, therefore showing it to the United States of America. And President Donald Trump is big on respect. There is no argument about that at all. So back to the announcement yesterday, a $600 billion investment between Saudi Arabia, not necessarily the country itself, but all in all, a $600 billion investment, $142 billion arm deal directly with Saudi Arabia. The president had this to say. Exactly 8 years ago this month, I stood in this very room and looked forward to a future in which the nations of this region would drive out the forces of terrorism and extremism and take your place among the proudest, most prosperous, most successful nations in the world as leaders of a modern and rising Middle East. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, widely known as MBS, had promised Trump that the kingdom would facilitate deals worth up to $600 billion if the president would make Saudi Arabia his first foreign stop in his second administration. The two were openly chummy before the signing of multiple memorandums at the royal court in Ryder, which Trump joked at one point that he should make the investments worth $1 trillion. Going into the details, the $142 billion defense agreement calls for the United States to give the Saudis state-of-the-art warfighting equipment and services from over a dozen U.S. defense firms. The deal will focus on Air Force advancements and space capabilities, air and missile defense, maritime and coastal security, border security, and land force modernization, as well as communication systems upgrades. The U.S., he told the crowd, quote, "The U.S. makes the best military equipment, the best missiles, the best rockets, the best everything." The president has long touted Saudi arms sales as a boon to the American industry, but they have been controversial in the past. Back in 2019, a bipartisan majority in Congress passed a trio of bills blocking an $8 billion weapons sale to Saudi Arabia and its ally, the United Arab Emirates, the UAE, over concerns as to how they would be used in Yemen's long stalemated civil war. The congressional rebuke of the Saudi arms deal following the murder of Jamal Khashoggi inside the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, which weakened support for Ryder in Washington after U.S. intelligence agencies assessed that MBS ordered that operation. Trump vetoed the restriction, saying that it was saying at the time that blocking the arm transfer would hamper the ability of the United States to sustain and shape critical security cooperation activities in the Middle East. So now turning to the investments itself, the $600 billion investment commitment includes letters of understanding for future cooperation on energy, future defense capabilities, mineral resources, as well as space and infectious diseases. As part of the agreement, Saudi-based Data Vault will invest $20 billion towards U.S. AI centers, while Google, Oracle, Salesforce, AMD, and Uber have pledged $80 billion in technologies across both countries. Meanwhile, U.S. companies Hill International, Jacobs, Parsons, and AECOM are taking on infrastructure projects inside Saudi Arabia worth a total of $2 billion, including the expansion of Ryder King Salman's International Airport. GE Verona, who has a major facility here in Wilmington, will also send out gas turbines and energy solutions worth a whopping $14.2 billion, while Boeing will sell 737-8 passenger aircrafts to Saudi jet rental service Avalease for $4.8 billion. Additionally, Kingdom-based Shakim Solutions has agreed to invest $5.8 billion to construct a facility in Michigan. President Donald Trump said, "It is crucial for a wider world note that this great transformation has not come from Western interventionists flying in with lectures on how to live or how to govern your own affairs." We heard those comments from the president earlier. Turning to Iran, Trump said he didn't want to merely condemn the past choices of Iranian leaders, but to offer them a new and better path towards a much more hopeful future. The investment conference was packed with business leaders lobbying for more economic partnerships between the United States and Saudi Arabia, which has targeted increased diversification as part of its Saudi Vision 2030 initiative. The projects include climate-controlled indoor cities in the world's largest downtown project taking place in Saudi Arabia. Trump aide Elon Musk also made a surprise appearance on the stage at the forum, revealing that he has spoken with President Trump and the Saudi royal family about building tens of millions of robots that he hopes will be part of everyday life in Saudi Arabia. He also spoke to the leaders about autonomous cars and how his technology would be relevant to the Saudi Arabs' future economic vision. So with this, a major announcement coming out of Trump's first full day in Saudi Arabia. And from, you know, of course, all accounts, it seems like a phenomenal step forward. Saudi Arabia is a country of unimaginable wealth. I mean, obviously, we have wealth here in the United States. Right, you look at our buildings and the things that we have, it's incredible wealth. But you can't even put that up in comparison to the kind of wealth in Saudi Arabia. It's nuts, the kind of money that they have over there. And of course, it all comes from their natural resource, which is oil. Saudi Arabia is sitting on a literal mine of gold. Not actual gold itself, but liquid gold, oil. And they have got the ability to pump that stuff out of the ground and make ridiculous amounts of money. I mean, even in the video of Trump speaking, you saw the convention center thing that they were in. I mean, it's got, I can't imagine what that thing cost. I mean, these huge floating chandeliers. Yes, we have that stuff in the United States, but there's nothing like that kind of stuff that they've got in Saudi Arabia. It's absolutely remarkable. So with this announcement, obviously, folks on the left, it's Trump-related, so they're not happy with it. But Kevin O'Leary was on Fox News yesterday and made a very interesting point as to the reason why this agreement with Saudi Arabia should be such a big win for the president and such a big deal for the United States. Here's Kevin O'Leary.
Really, what's going on with this trip are two things. One is China. He doesn't want China to develop a relationship in what I call the Middle East circle of friendship. And that is Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates. And then you ask yourself, why are all these AI guys with him? What's with that? And I'll tell you what it's about. At the end of this week, he has a meeting in Abu Dhabi. And what's happened in the last 2 years, maybe it's taken three, but U.S. is number one in AI development and spending. Number two is China. Number three now, and very advanced in certain verticals, is the United Arab Emirates. They are so far ahead in many different verticals. And he wants to see that cooperation on AI be removed from the China model, because remember there was talk about the UAE starting to talk to China about AI. He doesn't want any of that. He wants these companies to form very strong bonds in AI, and when we get later this week to the UAE, that's what you're going to hear about. This is crucial. So China and AI, and of course all this money talk's fantastic, but we're in an economic war with China, and he is cutting them off at the pass in the fastest growing region on earth, the Middle East.
I mean, I can't restate anything better than Kevin O'Leary just said it. Obviously, there's been a lot of discussion, no surprise, no shock, about the growing war with China. Not a physical war, not a land war, anything like that, but an economic war with the world's two largest economies, the United States and China. President Donald Trump, according to Kevin O'Leary, who I have no reason to disbelieve, tends to be a pretty smart guy if you followed him in the past, talks about the importance of harboring these relationships in what he says is the fastest growing region anywhere in the world, and getting those countries, which again include Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates, UAE, getting those groups, getting those governments, in the case of Saudi Arabia, getting the royal family close to the United States of America, making sure that those investments are happening with the U.S. instead of with the CCP in China. And how can that be a bad thing? We are in a position in which we are at a complete war with China economically. We've talked about the big time issues with intellectual property that has spawned a lot of the trade war discussions and talks that have gone on, complete and total trade war with China. And they have done a very good job, to the credit of the Chinese Communist Party, they have done a very good job inserting themselves in many developing areas. You may or may not be familiar with, you know, the discussion of the Silk Road Initiative, where China is going into places in Africa, places in South America, building vast amounts of infrastructure, road networks, utilities, building and making those investments in many third world countries. Now, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and Qatar, they're not third world countries like some of the places we're talking about in Africa and in South America. China is making those investments right now. Right, because they know that some of these discussions taking place internationally could potentially lead to future prosperity in some of these areas, in some of these regions. And so China proactively has gone ahead and gotten very cozy with many of these governments, invested trillions of dollars in infrastructure in many of these places, and in a hopes that 10, 15, 20, 30 years down the road, these countries are very prosperous. And who are they going to look at for future investment and future innovation? Well, they're going to look at their good friends, China, who have been with us for 15, 20, 30 years. China is planting those seeds at the very, very ground level. China is setting these things up very early on in the hopes that they get a big payout in the future. That they are setting themselves up for the potential for great amounts of prosperity. And to China's credit, while I'd like to be pissed off about that, while I'd like to be frustrated that that's happening, I can't be. It's a smart move by the Chinese Communist Party. It's a smart move by that government to insert themselves when these countries, many of them, are in very, very poor condition. Very, very poor states. And so China comes in, waves a bunch of money, builds a bunch of roads, builds a bunch of infrastructure, those countries are forever in debt, not even financial debt, but in debt for, based on relationship to China. That's going to make U.S. involvement 15 or 20 years down the road very hard in many of these countries. China is playing the long game. The great analogy is China is playing chess, and many other countries, including in the past, the United States was playing checkers. Completely, vastly different games. China has been very, very smart about that. And also, with his visit in Saudi Arabia yesterday, part of this four-day trip, the president also announced that he will remove all sanctions on Syria. This came out last night, Trump telling the packed auditorium, quote, "I will be ordering a stoppage of sanctions against Syria in order to give them a chance at greatness." In Syria, which has been so much, there has been so much misery and death. There is a new government that will hopefully succeed in stabilizing the country and keeping peace. That's what we want to see. In Syria, they've had their own share of travesty, war, and killing for many years. That's why my administration has already taken the first steps towards restoring normal relations between the United States and Syria for the first time in more than a decade. Syria has been designated a state sponsor of terror by the United States government going all the way back to 1979. U.S. sanctions were imposed on the country back in 2004 by the Bush administration and again in 2011 during the Obama administration after the regime of then-President Bashar Assad launched a brutal crackdown on anti-government uprisings. In the roughly 14 years since, the country that has been devastated by civil war, violence, and brutal terror attacks, including ISIS takeovers in part of the country back in 2014, has eradicated some of those groups. The toppling of the Assad regime during a shock offensive by anti-Assad militia groups in December of last year stunned global communities and brought about the prospects of a new beginning for what is a devastated, war-torn country. Syria's new president has talked about reform and has talked about leading the country of Syria into growth and prosperity, right? If you look at what's going on in places like Syria, there's no reason that they can't be like Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and Qatar. There's no reason for it. They've got the similar amounts of raw natural resources and oil and things of that nature right under their feet like many of those other countries. They have the ability to be an incredibly wealthy and prosperous nation. But unfortunately, for decades, they have been embattled in civil war and terror groups taking over parts of the country. You know, when President Donald Trump talked about countries that just cannot get their act together, it's places like Syria that he's talking about. That seemingly every couple of decades or so, it's completely going back to the ground floor. And then you've got these groups that spawn up. You've got ISIS that moves in during the Obama-Biden administration. It's just been a mess. And the president seems to think that there is the possibility of Syrian prosperity, the opportunity for Syria to become a stable voice in the Middle East. And here's, kind of going into the larger geopolitical sphere with all of this. The more and more Middle Eastern countries that have stability, the more Middle East countries that are not described as war-torn and do not have these fringe radical governments operating, you have enough of those eventually in the Middle East, everybody else gets in line, right? If enough of your peers have stable, prosperous governments, it seems to me the logical conclusion is many of these other war-torn countries throughout the Middle East clean up their act, stop harboring terrorism and terrorists, most of whom have a constant crossfire on the constant crosshair on the United States of America. That stuff just goes away. when you can look at your neighbor and see incredible amounts of prosperity, incredible amounts of wealth and stability, why would you not want to follow that? Why would you not want to have that in your own country? That is part of this discussion that is taking place. That is part of this very clear move by the Trump administration and by others throughout the Middle East to bring forward stability and peace. And of course, in all of this, there's really one goal and one objective. It's to get Iran in check. As we sit and chat this morning, Iran continues to be the largest state sponsor of terror. They have been so consistently, and they continue to be so. And obviously, that has been a big talking point for Trump. That has been a big talking point for governments across the world, with Iran sponsoring all of these terror groups, funneling cash into them to support their terrorist activities. You surround Iran with a bunch of very prosperous, very wealthy, very stable countries. It's going to be very hard for, I believe, it's going to be very hard for them to continue to operate in the manner in which they're doing so right now. It seems like it could be a successful game plan. So you've got the $600 billion investment deal between Saudi Arabia and the United States, a $142 billion arms deal, and then the president announcing that the U.S. will remove all sanctions on Syria. This is just day one of President Trump's visit to the Middle East. He's got 3 days left on it, and I can only imagine what's going to be coming up. He is currently in flight to Qatar this morning. Not sure exactly when he is slated to land, but I saw a video on X a little while ago American fighter jets trailing Air Force One flying aside it as that flight continues to Qatar this morning. Here's a video being posted on X of United States Air Force fighter jets flying alongside Air Force One as it continues its trek throughout the Middle East. This has been, so far, just in one day, an absolutely phenomenal trip. And just refreshing X, it looks like the president has officially touched down in Qatar. So those conversations will begin taking place over the next couple of hours as news continues to roll out of the Middle East. We'll bring it to you right here on the Nick Craig Show. Want to remind you that if you are interested in getting access to daily show notes and more, you can head on over to our Patreon at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Access to daily show notes, all of the videos and pictures and articles that we talk about, plus bonus content, including our monthly hangout that happens on a Zoom call each and every month. If you are enjoying the show and are interested in supporting it financially, $5, $10 a month, head on over to patreon.com/Nick Craig. I want to also tell you about The Law Group. When legal challenges arise, trust The Law Group in Wilmington. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across the eastern half of our state. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you need a strong defense, The Law Group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures that your questions are answered and issues are resolved promptly. They're located in downtown Wilmington and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088. You can also visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. View all of their various areas of practice. They've got a great blog on there where they discuss various legal issues. Give them a call, 910-251-6088, or again, their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication that you can rely on. We appreciate their continued support here of the Nick Craig Show. As our show continues this morning, live YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And welcome back to a Wednesday edition of the Nick Craig Show, streaming live 7 a.m. Eastern on YouTube, Rumble, and X 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. Turning our attention to some other news this morning, an update on a story we've been tracking for a couple of weeks. A Milwaukee County judge in Hannah Dugan has been indicted after allegedly helping an illegal alien invade ICE. Whoops. Guess we shouldn't have been doing that. A grand jury yesterday indicted a Wisconsin court judge who was arrested last month for allegedly shielding an illegal immigrant from federal agents. You'll remember this story. Milwaukee County Judge Hannah Dugan was arrested and charged with obstruction of an official proceeding back on April the 25th after evidence became known that she had shielded an illegal immigrant from federal agents, according to a criminal complaint. She was also charged with concealing an individual to prevent discovery and arrest. Dugan was indicted by a federal grand jury yesterday after listening to testimony regarding charges that she allegedly tried to help an illegal alien escape her courtroom. Now, let me say this. Grand juries, you've heard this for as long as you've been alive. Grand juries can indict a ham sandwich if they want. Right, the bar for an indictment out of a grand jury is relatively low. We understand that. That there's no argument there at all. But when you go back and look at the details of this story, the grand jury is the first step. Judge Dugan, who is a flaming progressive liberal, had ICE agents show up to the courthouse in which she works, go to whoever was in charge of the courthouse and say, "Hey, we've got federal warrants. We've got federal arrest warrants for an individual that is currently in your courthouse." Judge Dugan got wind of this and allowed that individual and his attorney to escape through a back room, literally through a back hallway, and then run out of the courthouse, absolutely obstructing the federal government. Now, of course, the left wants you to believe that no matter who somebody is, regardless of whether they're in the country legally or not, that it is never appropriate to go after these individuals. And in this case, the illegal immigrant in discussion this morning is somebody that was in court for another matter. So already having run-ins with the U.S. legal system here illegally. The federal government went through the process, right? Due process this, due process that. The federal government went through the process of obtaining an arrest warrant for this individual, only for this left-wing wacko liberal to use her authority, to use her position on the bench to allow this individual to escape. And it's so funny because we are constantly having to listen to the bitching and complaining from Democrats as it relates to due process and following the process this and following the process that. In this case, the process was followed. The feds got an arrest warrant for a guy, went to go arrest him, only for a Democrat judge to allow him to escape federal authorities. So why is it that you guys are browbeating Republicans over due process? When the due process exists, you use your position of authority to usurp the federal government. You use your position of power to obstruct federal officials in carrying out their constitutional duty, in this case, arresting somebody that they have an arrest warrant for. On Tuesday, a federal grand jury convened to consider the indictment, hearing testimony that included statements from Eduardo Flores Ruiz's attorney, who has since withdrawn from his case, and Dugan's court clerk. Also giving testimony was Milwaukee County Judge Christiella Craviller, a misdemeanor judge whose courtroom is next to Dugan's. The panel was expected to decide whether to indict Dugan ahead of her previously scheduled preliminary court hearing. Dugan's attorneys told Fox News, quote, "As she said after her unnecessary arrest, Judge Dugan asserts her innocence and looks forward to being vindicated in court. She is expected back tomorrow, May the 15th, to face federal charges of felony obstruction of a federal agency and concealing a person to help them avoid arrest, which is a misdemeanor. She is expected to enter a plea on the charges during the hearing." Well, of course. Of course she's going to enter a plea. Now, this is a whole different bag of worms that we're not going to get into this morning, but that's all the federal government does is pleas. Right? They don't prosecute like 97% of their cases. The federal government pleads everything out. They claim, oh, it's because, you know, we have to, we don't have the resources, we don't have the time to handle these cases. They plea everything. It's like a, it's like 97%. The FBI arrested Dugan for allegedly hiding a previously deported illegal immigrant in her jury room to stop him from being arrested by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Federal agents from ICE, the FBI, CBP, and DEA attempted to arrest Flores Ruiz after his scheduled criminal court appearance before Dugan back on April the 18th to face three misdemeanor battery charges for allegedly beating up two people. That seems like a great guy. Seems like somebody that we want here in the United States. Dugan demanded that the officers proceed to the chief judge's office, and after his hearing ended, escorted Flores Ruiz and his attorney out of a restricted jury door, bypassing a public area where agents were waiting in order to help him avoid arrest, according to the complaint. Her attorney told the court last month, Judge Dugan wholeheartedly regrets and protests her arrest. It was not made in the interest of public safety. Oh, it absolutely was made in the interest of public safety. So let's just, again, walk through this situation. You've got a guy who's illegally in the United States, has already re-entered the United States illegally, is being charged with three battery counts of beating up two individual people, is in front of a judge on an unrelated matter. The feds come in and say, we want this guy. He's already been deported and he's back in the United States illegally. Oh, and by the way, he's a criminal. He's beating people up. He's got battery charges against him. We want to take him under custody. And a judge allows this individual to escape back into the population. How is that not absolutely in the interest of public safety? This is a guy who has a history, and I understand innocent until proven guilty. I get all of that. This is a guy who has a track record of potentially being violent. It is in the utmost as it respects to interest of public safety. Her attorney is full of shit, and so is she. This comes down to something very clear and very simple. Judge Dugan disagrees with President Donald Trump. She disagrees with Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem. She disagrees with people like Tom Homan, who want to hold those who are illegally in the country accountable. She has an ideological disagreement with those individuals. And let me state this. It is perfectly okay to have a disagreement with the president. It is perfectly okay to have a disagreement with Kristi Noem and Tom Homan, and everybody else associated. No argument with that at all. You're allowed to disagree as much as you'd like. But when you translate that into using your position of power, your position of authority, to block the federal government from conducting operations that they have the utmost authority and ability to do, that's the problem. And this is what you're seeing with the left. They are incapable of divorcing themselves from their political ideology and their political agenda and their work. You have a judge who has sworn to uphold the rule of law, who went through extensive education and then through a rigorous exam known as the bar to go through this process to become a judge, to become an attorney, who is using their position, in this case, her position of power, to allow somebody back into society who has a track record of being dangerous. Ellen is commenting on our YouTube live channel this morning. She says, the victims were in her courtroom watching her do this. She does not belong on the bench. Oh, there's no question about it. She will be disbarred and will not be able to be on the bench or practice law anymore. There's no question about that. Aqua Blue commenting, law is the law. North is still North. At least that's how I feel about it. Unfortunately, many folks on the left don't believe law is the law. But these are the same folks that want to throw their political opponents in jail. These are the same folks that want to weaponize the Department of Justice, the FBI, and all of the other great three-letter agencies that we have against their political opponents on sham nonsense. But then when you've got somebody who is a criminal, illegally in the country, a track record of being violent in the country, they want to back off and say, oh, well, we don't agree with that rule of law. We don't want to follow that rule of law. So we want to weaponize the Department of Justice against political opponents, but we want to allow dangerous illegal migrants to roam the streets of whatever city, whatever state we're in. I mean, are these people verifiably insane or what? Makes absolutely no sense at all. There is no logical way that you can justify that it is appropriate for you as a judge to use your authority to harbor an illegal immigrant from federal authorities. There is no way that you can justify those actions in a legal basis. Now, you might be able to justify them ideologically. You might be able to justify them from a personal political standpoint, but you can't justify them as it relates to law. You can't justify them as it relates to the United States Constitution or a state constitution because it doesn't exist. This is the problem with the left, as I just mentioned. They are incapable of divorcing themselves from their wacko political ideology and just do their job. This is a problem all over the place. It's a problem in the public education system. It's a problem in the judicial system. It's a problem in all facets of state and local government. Look at all the crap that we read out of Washington, D.C. over the last couple of months as it relates to individuals saying, I'm not going to do what the new administration wants me to do. I am going to resist these changes from Trump. That's not your choice. You don't get a say. You're not the president of the United States. You're not the head of an agency. You're a worker for the federal government. You're a worker for the American people. And if you don't want to do the work of the administration, then get the hell out. If you don't morally agree with what's going on, then resign and find somewhere else to work. Go work for some NGO. Go work for some liberal nonprofit. Go work for the ACLU. Go do the bidding of the left in the private sector. But I'll be damned if I'm going to sit here as an American taxpayer and watch people that are in no position of authority, no position of power, tell me how they're going to resist the new administration, how they're going to resist the agenda of President Donald Trump, who, I'll note to all of you leftists again, won 7 of 7 swing states and the popular vote, very handedly whooped your guys' rear ends in November of last year. I'm not going to take it. You can either get on board and follow the agenda or get the hell out. Those are your two options. There's no third option. There's no blurry line between the two. It's a very binary choice, a 1 or a 0, A or B. Pick and choose one or the other. That's it. There's no other options. And so this brings the larger question forward of what do you do when people are deciding that they are above the law? Judge Dugan believes that she's above the law. And in fact, she was arrested because of that. Now, of course, her and her attorney claim that this is nothing more than a political posturing. This is nothing more than the federal government flexing its muscles and turning this into some sort of trick and pony show. No, not at all. If you're going to commit a felony and harbor somebody illegally and obstruct federal officials from doing their jobs, you're going to be arrested. You're going to be charged. That's how this works. I don't know how you get off thinking that you're somehow in a higher level of authority where this doesn't relate to you and this doesn't have any effect on you. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem told Jesse Waters on his Fox News show last night that she was grateful Dugan was indicted by a federal grand jury, noting, quote, she will be held accountable for that. This was a great decision coming forward to recognize that nobody can facilitate breaking the law. We shouldn't be able to allow that in this country, and we need to make sure that even judges are held accountable for their actions. Attorney General Pam Bondi blasting Dugan's actions, saying, quote, we could not believe that a judge really did this. You cannot obstruct a criminal case, and really, shame on her. It was a domestic violence case of all cases, and she's protecting a criminal defendant over the victims of a crime. Bondi says that Flores Ruiz beat up two people, a guy and a girl, saying, quote, he beat up a guy and hit him 30 times, knocked him to the ground, choked him, and beat up a woman so badly that they both had to go to the hospital. So that's the brave soul that Judge Dugan was protecting. She committed a felony. She committed a federal felony. And I am all for accountability. I believe that regardless of your status, regardless of your position, that you need to be held to not only the same standard as everybody else, but a higher standard if you're in these positions. I feel this way about judges, lawyers, law enforcement. When you are taking those oaths, you need to be held to the absolute highest standard because these positions require trust and respect. If people don't respect law enforcement, they can't do their job. We were talking about that yesterday as it relates to the Wilmington Police Department. Huge problems there. If judges are not respected, if the judicial system is not respected, then the whole thing crumbles. The whole thing starts falling apart at a very rapid rate. You will watch the complete and total destruction of U.S. society if judges, lawyers, and law enforcement are just ignored. And there's no respect given for any of them. You will turn into an anarchist third world society very, very quickly. So these individuals need to be held to a very high standard. These individuals need to be held to a higher standard than anybody else. And when they are found in abject of the law, when they are knowingly and willingly breaking the law to push a political agenda and political narrative, the book needs to be thrown at them. I don't think they need to be unfairly prosecuted. I'm not a fan of that at all. I don't believe that we need to change the statute of limitation or change laws to prosecute them. No, absolutely not. I think we need to use the laws that are on the books, the authority that is already given to federal officials to prosecute these charges, to hold these individuals accountable. No unfair prosecution, no changing of the rules, no changing of the laws to go after these people. If they in fact broke the law, if they in fact committed a crime, then use the laws that are already on the books. See, that's the big difference between the left and the right. We don't need to gin up or change the statute of limitation or make up new laws or make up new interpretations to justify our actions. This judge broke the law knowingly and willingly, and she's going to be held accountable for it. Now, she's going to plea out by the looks of it. So there's not going to be a trial and a whole thing. She's going to plea out. She'll likely lose her position, likely lose her seat on the bench, and that's great. And hopefully this is a message to everybody else that is a wacko leftist liberal judge that if this is how you're going to operate, the feds are going to hunt you down and they're going to throw your ass in jail and you're going to be charged and convicted very clearly. I mean, that's the message. That's the reason for this. We are past the time where individuals are allowed to break the law and do whatever the hell they want. That's what the last 4 years were. As long as you were in favor of the Democrat Party, the hell with the rule of law. As long as you were pushing a political agenda, pushing a political narrative that was favored by the left, then do whatever you want. Right? COVID-19, lockdowns, can't go into a business, can't go to the beach, can't go to a boat ramp, but you can burn a city to the ground in the name of George Floyd. You can throw bottles and rocks and bricks at law enforcement and burn cities to the ground under mostly peaceful protests, gatherings of thousands of people, no concern there at all. That's how the left operates. They have once again taken just a couple of steps too far. They have pushed the issue too far once again, surprise, surprise, and now it's coming back and biting them in the ass. Not because the rule of law is being weaponized, but because they're being held accountable for things that they should have been years ago, but nobody was ever going to do it. This administration is making it very clear. If you're going to break the law, if you're going to fly in the face of this administration like Harvard University, you're going to pay a price. No more free lunches. No more doing whatever you want because you feel that it's the more important to do things that way, or you feel that what's happening is not appropriate, or you don't like it. The time of us caring about your feelings is over with. I don't care. If you can't abide by the law, then and break it, you're going to be arrested and charged with breaking the law. This is not an overly complicated issue. You and I deal with this every single day. If we are going to go 30 miles over the speed limit, we're probably going to get pulled over by the police. And in the case of that, we're probably going to be arrested because we're recklessly driving. Like, that happens to you every single day when you see a speed limit sign. You've got to be careful as to what you're doing. But for whatever reason, Democrat judges think, oh, they're above the law. They're above authority of the federal government and the evil, awful orange man. What a sham. We'll continue to track President Trump's Middle East visit that is happening today and over the next couple of days. We'll have those details coming up for you tomorrow right here on the Nick Craig Show. Once again, I want to thank the law group here in Wilmington. Give them a call at 910-251-6088 or visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. Thanks for joining us live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, or X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great day.